Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us on this weekend as we talk about financial matters. Both myself and my co-host here, Pat, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And good to be here with you as we're kicking off August this weekend, I suppose.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, so much for, what's the talk of
I never pay any attention to those sayings.
Because none of those things work.
Yeah.
But they're always interesting. Anyway, it's been not a bad summer for most investors.
Yeah.
And economy's growing well. And
I don't know how much volatile. The news is volatile.
Well, the news is, yeah. If you follow the news, you think the world's coming to an
end. Yeah, the news is volatile.
It's always volatile, though.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we've been doing this for over 20 years, and if you just started listening,
where have you been?
Welcome.
Yeah.
And you can go back and listen to some of our podcasts if you wish.
Yeah. And anyway, this program, you know, our show, we deal a lot with people, helping them save for retirement, transitioning into retirement. That's often a big part of what we tend to specialize in, helping those folks as they transition into retirement, and some for saving for retirement. And, of course, we'll take some calls on this program, as usual. But we also want to spend a bit of time talking about how you can be...
How do you protect yourself from bad investments?
And investment advisors.
And unscrupulous investment advisors. So, it's a little background on this. Scott, we have a producer, Jasmine, that helps us put together this show every week. And throughout the week, we email her articles that we think are worthy. We do it independent of each other, Scott.
As a reminder to ourselves during the show, let's talk about this.
Well, this last week, when we were going through these articles, there was a flood of them that had to do with the sale of private placements, the sale of just
non-traded real estate investment,
and just flat out Ponzi
fraud. Yes.
Fraud. And I thought to myself, this is, before the show we were talking, this is not that hard to detect. This isn't that hard to determine.
So I got
to
tell you, yeah. So if you want to join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON will get you on the show. 1-888-2-HANSON. That's our contact number.
So we're going to talk about that today.
Yeah. And
tell the personal story.
Yes. So this came out... We've kind of waited to talk about it, wondered if we should even bring it up, but I thought we're going to bring it up anyway. So, because it hasn't been proven. It's still alleged. But there was I almost call him a gentleman, a person who lived about 10 doors down from me in El Dorado Hills. I've lived in El Dorado Hills 25 years, Northern California, outside of Sacramento. And a gentleman about my age, couple kids about my kids' ages. I never knew the guy well, but it was always...
just another guy in the neighborhood?
Yeah, he'd stop, I'd drive by, I'd be mowing his lawn or whatever, and I'd see him at the gym periodically. And just even a couple months ago, I remember I hadn't seen him in a while, and I ran him in front of the gym, and we talked for a couple minutes about where his kids were in school and all that kind of stuff. He was arrested for financial fraud, for elder abuse, for stealing $2 million from clients.
And how was he doing it, did they say?
He was like a pawn. He was falsifying statements.
Just making it up.
This is what the charges were against him, and they arrested him. And so I went, I'm thinking, and I hate hearing stories like that for a variety of reasons. One is I hate hearing people victimized. I don't care who they are. No one deserves that.
No one.
Right? And I hate hearing stories like that because it's just not helpful for our industry.
And especially elderly people. You're stealing from, Well, you shouldn't steal, obviously, from anyone, but...
But it's someone at the time of their life, they don't
have any... There's no time to restart.
Right, of course.
It's over, you know? They're not... Most are not reentering the workforce, depending upon their age.
So I thought... The fact is, anyone, before they invested with them, had they taken 2 minutes, they could have seen some red flags to say, maybe I shouldn't invest with this
firm.
And
how do you know that, Scott?
Because I took 2 minutes.
And what'd you do? Like, what process did you go through
to
do
it? It's pretty simple. And so during this program, we're going to share a bit of some of these steps with you.
On everyone, including us, before you give Hansel McLean any money.
How do you know we're a legitimate firm?
Yeah, look us up. Read things.
And every time I read these stories, it wouldn't have taken much to figure out there's too many red flags here. It would not have taken much. And the Better Business Bureau means nothing, right?
Forget that.
It doesn't, because I...
Well, it is one screen.
But they're not in the business of...
testing
the legitimacy
people.
Of their financial advisors.
They're the ones that people complain to after the fact.
Yeah.
And the Consumer Protection,
Financial Protection Bureau.
It is normally after the fact as well.
Yeah, I don't know what they don't seem to be.
Well, I think it's, yeah.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about how to make sure this doesn't happen to you, number one. Number two, just plain, there's some investment products. We'll spend some time on this show talking about some investment products.
You should just plain stay away from.
Gosh. 888-2-HANSEN to be part of Hansel McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-242-6766 is our numerical number there. And we're going to start off here in Sacramento with Sam. Sam, you're with Hansel McLean.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Wonderful. How are you, Sam?
I'm doing pretty good. Doing pretty good.
Good.
What can we do for you?
Yeah, so just got a question about life insurance. I was listening to your show a couple weeks ago. And you guys were mentioning how life insurance may not be the best bet. You may want to go into an IRA, Roth IRA, probably get more better bang for your buck. And I just wanted to see if that would probably be a best fit for me. I got a life insurance plan through one of my friends, good friend. You know, I don't think that he's trying to do me over or anything like that, but I'm just not sure if I signed up for a great plan or not.
All right, let me back up here. Before we answer the question. So I had a degree in finance, and when I graduated from school in 1990, I wanted to become a financial advisor, financial planner, certified financial planner. And I looked back then at the landscape of the firms out there, the big Wall Street firms. Back then, they would send you back to New York and teach you how to cold call. And if you can cold call enough people and open enough accounts, you'd be able to maintain a job with them, essentially how that. And I thought, that's really not the kind of career path I was looking for. So I went to work for a life insurance company that the pitch to me was that they're very much a financial planning type company. And they said that some 82% of their revenues come from retirement savings products, not insurance products, et cetera. Anyway, so I went to work for this insurance company, life insurance company.
As what you thought was a financial advisor.
As what I thought was a financial advisor. And essentially, you are indoctrinated, almost brainwashed on how wonderful life insurance is and how it's the answer for everything. Now,
cash value life insurance.
Cash value life insurance. I didn't last too long at that company, needless to say. But I did take some courses on how life insurance products work. I achieved, as Pat did as well, a chartered financial consulting designation, which has a few courses just on insurance products, also a certified financial planner. And so as my career grew and I became knowledgeable on all the other financial products that are out there that can solve problems, I came to believe that some of the things that the insurance company taught me were
biased.
Highly biased and not totally accurate.
So when we're going to answer your question, remember, life insurance is an important component of financial planning. But cash value life insurance may not be the best answer. So there's two types of life insurance.
The question is, why do you need to...
But you probably, if you have children, you're married, you may need life insurance. You probably would be best suited with what they call term insurance, where you buy it for a period of time. It's a term.
So, just like your home auto's insurance. It's a year policy.
Yeah. So you would buy it for what they call 10 or 15 or 20 year term. All that means is that you don't have to renew it for 10, 15 or 20 years and that you know what the premium payment will be. And at the end of the period, or when you quit paying, you just break the agreement and you go your own way and you didn't give them any extra cash for them to invest. I assume you have a cash
value. And it's designed for premature death, right?
Which is
premature death.
Why you have life insurance.
Right.
So my assumption is that you have something that actually you pay the premium in, and it carries some sort of value inside of it, cash value. Is that the case?
Yeah, it has a cash value, and it also has a death payout.
Okay, how much cash value is in the policy?
It goes up.
Oh, what do you have
now? How much is in it now?
Now.
Oh, how much do I have now? Let me...
Ballpark.
How much? $500 or $1,000?
Like $2,500.
And how much are your premium payments?
My premium is $200 a month.
Okay, and how long have you had this policy?
I had it for 3 years now.
You put some money into it up front, didn't you?
No, he's got $2,500 in it.
But he's only paid $3,600.
It says cash surrender value, and then I have like just my annual death payout. That
yeah, cash surrender value.
If I die, no matter what, I get $160,000. That's what it is.
You don't.
Yeah, you don't, but someone does.
Yeah.
Because where you're going to go, the money doesn't really matter.
So when I go, somebody gets $100.
So you've paid in over $7,000.
Yeah.
And you have $2,500.
Yes.
That's why we don't like these policies. Because for $140,000 term life insurance, you'd be talking about maybe $200 a year.
Yeah. And the difference is you take the difference and you put it into an IRA or Roth IRA or 401k, and you put it into... You sound like a young guy. You'd probably put
the
mostly...
Roth IRA.
You'd probably put mostly equities...
You would have had...
In the portfolio, you'd have a lot more money.
You would have had about seven... But you would have had almost... You would have... Counting some growth, the insurance would have been free in the last couple of years. You would have had over $7,000 saved. Now you've got $2,500.
So this is not the appropriate vehicle for you. How old are you?
I'm about to be 33.
And how many children do you own?
Do you own?
How many children do you have? They own you, by the way.
No kidding.
They own you.
They own my life. But I have one, and we're thinking of having another.
Okay. So, and how much money do you make a year?
I make 32 a year. My wife makes 100 and something
okay.
a year.
So your wife needs more life insurance than you do. And you both should buy 10 times your salary in life insurance.
Okay.
7 to 10 times your salary.
But term insurance is relatively inexpensive.
Yeah. Yes. Especially at your age.
I'm 51, and I have a $2 million term life insurance policy, and my premiums are like $1,200 a year.
So that's what you want to do.
So I'm 51, $2 million policy. Mm-hmm. I pay $1,200 a year.
And just cancel what you have. Take the difference and put it into a Roth IRA, and I would buy the total market.
Yep.
I would just buy the total market, which means
okay. You
if you Google total market mutual funds or exchange traded funds, it will give you a list of them. And I would set it up so it came out of my banking account on a monthly basis to fund a Roth IRA for both you and your wife.
So it doesn't matter that the policy that I have is the death benefit payout, it breaks. I mean, there's a non-guarantee and there's a guarantee.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, but that's the guarantee
every year.
Yeah, it's all garbage. That's all smoke and mirrors. Buy yourself
really
7 to 10 times term life insurance. Once they issue that policy, cancel your existing policy, take whatever cash is in it.
And put it in that Roth.
Put it in a Roth IRA and then set up your monthly, much like your pay your life insurance premiums now. I assume it comes out of your checking account on a monthly basis automatically.
Yeah.
Do the same thing for a Roth IRA by the total market. You're going to look back and go, and the guy's going to call you your friend and say,
Sam,
what are you doing? This is great. Just say, hey, that's not the direction I'm going to go. And then he says, well, if you surrender it, you're going to lose all this money because there's a surrender charge. That's a sunk cost. What we like to refer to as a highly priced education. Okay. So just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it. If you were my brother, this is exactly what I...
100%.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right?
Okay.
All right, Sam.
Easy enough.
Okay.
Appreciate the call.
Right, good luck.
No problem. Thank you. Right.
Thanks. It's amazing that these policies... You know otherwise they're still sold. So that agent who sold this policy at $200 a month, that wasn't that high of a death benefit. But yeah, it was 100. Yeah.
160.
$200. He probably... They probably got a $1,000 commission on this. Maybe $1,500 commission on this.
Yeah. So what's your point?
That's why they're sold.
Oh, exactly. They're not bought. They're sold. They're not bought. People buy term life insurance. Cash value life insurance is sold.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah. So, Pat, you had said that your son was pitched
something similar to this. Yes, yes. So here is so my son calls me and he says, yeah, there's this guy.
How old is your son?
20.
You've got three sons, so I assume this is your oldest son.
Yeah, he's 22. Yeah, he's 22. 22.
All right, whatever. That's close enough.
Yeah. Well, now I'm questioning it.
He's 23 in 2 months. His birthday is...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And pretty responsible guy, good saver, an investor. I think I've talked to him about him before on this show when he was trading penny stocks, which he's not doing anymore. But good saver. So he says, Dad, there's this guy and he has this retirement plan. And what do you think? And I said, well, what do you think? And he said, well, I like the idea that it grows tax deferred and it comes out tax free. And I said, well, here's the questions you have to ask, right?
What else has something?
What's the surrender charge on it? And what are the internal costs associated with this? And so... He met with the gentleman, and the gentleman says, and my son said, hey, full disclosure.
My dad's a prominent financial advisor.
and he has billions under management.
He's ranked top 100 in the nation.
Full disclosure, my dad is in this industry. And he
been has on the cover of industry magazines.
He has a pretty good understanding of it. So the guy didn't push him too hard. But at the end of it, though, my son said, you know, it was a full-on, from their standpoint, a retirement plan. And they said, well, why doesn't it make sense? He said, well, the cost, I want to know why he didn't think it made sense. Well, the costs were too high.
Of course.
And there was a surrender charge in there.
Yeah, very similar to what...
And given the alternatives, and my son has no need for life insurance at this stage of his life. And he said, given the alternatives, why wouldn't I use a Roth IRA instead? He said, you're exactly right. Connor? Yeah.
Yes.
And he's the same kid that after I quit paying for his gas when he graduated from college, now shops for his gasoline at Costco.
Isn't that the most interesting thing?
You know what he said to me? Have I talked to him about this on the show? He said to me, Dad, that Costco line, sometimes I'll wait for 15 or 20 minutes to get gas. I said, you've never complained about it when you were in college. He said, I never went there when I was in college. I said, why not? He said, you were paying for the gas. He said, you always told me, Dad, remember, no one cares about your money as much as you do.
I go to Costco about half the time for my gas. It's right by the freeway, and it's on my way home. And
went to Costco yesterday for gas.
Oftentimes, there's not a long line.
So, anyway.
And sometimes I have friends every once in a while. I started out, like many people, pretty broken life and done okay for myself. But you still got to figure out time to...
Last weekend, my
wife and I fly Southwest sometimes. We have to go somewhere. Last weekend, we were in Portland. And, you know, you can do the early check-in. It's $15 a piece. Mm-hmm. Well, if you do it when you book online, you can't break the reservation into two. It's like, so it ends up being, instead of 15 each, it's 30 each.
Uh-huh.
So you book the thing, then you use your phone, and you could break it out, and you could just do one, so that way...
And then you save the seat for the other person?
Correct.
You're that guy?
I'm that guy. It's $15, man. $15.
Listen, when I come down there, and they go, that seat's saved. That's not working for me. No, that's not how we play this.
Oh, is that what you would say to me? I said, that's safe, my wife?
Yes, I would say that's not how we play
really
this
lovely,
game. What I do instead, mate. Try this. I have some fake vomit. And what I do is I get on early, and I put the fake vomit on the seat next to me.
and you start hacking dry heaves.
No one sits in your aisle.
All right.
I do that when I'm not even saving a seat. I always sit. I've got the whole aisle by myself.
All right. Let's continue on with the calls here. We're going to 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of Hanson McLane's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. And we will be talking about how to protect yourself on some of these things. Let's talk to Stephanie in Atlanta. Stephanie, you're with Hanson McLane.
Hi.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hey. I have a question. I lost my house in 2009, 2008 because of the market, 2010, and then I had to do a short sale. Well, then my parents bought me a house because I have five kids. They put the down payment and got the house in their name, which was a short sale also. So now I'm ready to put the house in my name completely.
Okay.
So I'm trying to find the best way to go. Should I do a loan for just the balance I owe, which is not very much? It's $42,000. If I do a home loan, they want to do like one place wants to do a quick deed to put my name on it for 6 months and then refinance the house.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can do that, but then my mortgage would be a 20-year mortgage.
Stephanie?
Instead of what I have at 15. Yes.
So the house is in your parents' name now, is that correct?
Yes.
Oh. And what's the interest rate on it?
4.7%.
And what's the value of the home?
It's valued at $199 from the tax assessment, but I believe it's like $160.
And how is your credit now?
It's fair. It's considered good.
Like, what's the score?
But the low side, like 711.
Okay. So how would I address this? You could go one of two ways. One is the loan your parents have now can probably not be
assignable.
Assigned.
Assumed, whatever, yeah.
Yeah. And the interest rate at 4.75 right now.
Well, given the size of the loan, because the cost of refinancing is, when you factor all that in, it's a pretty good rate.
Yeah. So what do you think you should do, Scott?
Well, I don't want to pay $32,000 in interest for a $42,000 home loan.
Oh, listen, so Stephanie, when you think about it that way, right, which is a 20-year or 30-year mortgage, these are simple interest loans, which means you can make any payment you want over any time period and pay that down.
So you paid it off tomorrow, you wouldn't be paying any of that future interest.
So don't get caught up on the amount of interest over the length of the loan. Just think about what the interest rate is because it's called a simple interest loan. Now, oftentimes the mortgage brokers will try to get you to change a loan.
They get paid a commission.
And tell you that, you know, we're going to get a 15-year, and even though the interest rate is the same or maybe a little bit higher, it's going to save you all this interest money. That's all garbage because there's what's called simple interest loans. So we're not concentrating on that. We're concentrating on the loan the amount, which is the $42,000, and the interest rate is 4.7%. Why do you want this home in why do you want it in your name? What's wrong with keeping it in your parents' name?
For now.
Right. They want to retire and probably buy another house. So they kind of want to be off that.
Oh, they would rather not have the loan in their name.
Right. And then I'm wondering, what if they sold me the house for the full price and I got the loan for that instead of the other? And then
that would be probably the cleanest way to structure this. I would talk to a couple
mortgage brokers. That's actually not a bad idea, Scott.
Yeah.
So you get a $140,000 loan on it, turn around. Because the house is worth $200,000.
Yeah, there's some planning.
Right.
How much was the house when you bought it? Your parents bought it.
$86,000.
So we got some planning issues here. Because now the house is worth $100,000 more than that. It's technically, who's been paying on it? You have the whole time?
Me, yes.
So there's a couple issues you need to.
What are you talking about, gifting and estate planning, Scott?
Yeah, well, you need to document, at least have some, you're thinking the parents aren't going to be that worth that much. It's not going to make a difference.
That's right, under the new rules. Yeah, it's like, what are mom and dad worth?
If they're worth over $20 million, they're probably not
Are mom and dad worth over $2 million?
No.
Okay, then I'm not worried about the estate planning. I would probably just buy the house from mom and dad for the $42,000 and get a loan for it.
Yeah, I talk to a decent loan broker and say, here's what we need to do and figure out the right strategy. There's downsides to either. I would think the best course of action is just keeping that loan, trying to get it paid off over the shortest period of time possible, and then changing title on the house.
Yeah.
That would be the simplest, cleanest thing to do.
How much are your payments are you making every month?
How much your payments, Stephanie?
$800.
Oh, see, it sounds like you're getting this thing paid off.
Yeah.
We're up against the clock here. I talked to a couple of loan brokers and get this.
Yes.
But this is a good listen. You know, if you have kids, this you can help them, but oftentimes there's some encumbrances that might cause some
repercussions.
And when we come back, we're going to talk a bit about what you can do to protect yourself, make sure you don't get taken advantage of some things, because there's more stories. Yeah, anyway, 1-888-2-HANSON to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. 1-888-2-HANSON. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit hansonmclean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLean.
We had started off the program. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We had started off the program. I think just in the last several weeks, there's been a number of articles that we've seen about like small Ponzi schemes where people have taken just flat out stolen money.
Non-traded real estate investment
that
trust.
Partially blew up,
but...
A 40% decline overnight.
40% decline overnight.
And a large one, come on. Also looked at some other sort of private placements that have gone south.
Which may or may not have been Ponzi schemes or partial Ponzi schemes. Hard to tell. It's hard to tell.
But what I can say is this,
They all have something in common.
And Hanson McLean, we've been around 25 years helping our clients. And has every client done great with us? No. Has everyone had a phenomenal experience? No. The vast majority have had great experience with us, obviously. But one thing I can say, we've never had sold a private placement to somebody.
Or a non-traded real estate investment trust.
Things that just blew up. Or some other thing that was some Ponzi scheme. Because it's... They're somewhat easy to detect. Number one, and number two, if your economic interests are aligned with your advisor's economic interests,
they won't sell these.
Correct.
They won't sell these.
Yeah, because it's they have the same objective you do.
So let's start with the REITs, Scott.
And we started off talking. Let's first talk about how to make sure your advisory firm and your advisors.
Okay.
Because we first started off talking about Reimers Financial out of El Dorado Hills, David Reimers, and maybe this is all alleged, so
maybe he's innocent, but
this is all I'm talking about is what the experience has been, and there's enough dirt there that the Attorney General of California seems to think something's going on. So I went, I thought, if in this David Reimers, there's $2 million stolen from investors, allegedly. So I went on his website just to a little background. Number one, I didn't see any disclosures that he was securities licensed at all.
That's a first red flag.
Or registered investment advisory firm. So here's what I did. I simply Googled broker check. I Googled broker check. And at broker check, you can look at one of two things. You can look at an individual or you can look at a firm. So I just entered the person's name. David Reimers entered his name. And by looking at that, it said there was a couple disclosures that I went and read on the disclosures.
And the disclosures are normally negative.
It's usually customer complaints, which...
Can or cannot be...
Someone's been around a long time, you might just have a crazy customer.
Because that happens.
You know, there's...
If you have thousands of customers, you're going to get a couple crazy ones.
Yeah, that just happens periodically. But so there's sometimes customers complaint, but you can look and see what the complaint is. You can
and
see if
whether it was settled or not and how it was settled.
Yeah, you can see if it was the sale of a non-traded real estate investment trust. You can see if it was the sale of an annuity product.
Private placement.
Right. So you can see what the customer, and those are usually what the customer complaints are, those sort of things. But looking at this, I saw that he'd gotten slapped from the regulators for borrowing money from a client, like $75,000.
Which is an absolute do not do.
Yeah. You're not supposed to borrow money from clients. But number one. Number two, do you want to use an advisor who has to borrow money? I mean,
yeah,
and there were some back taxes. He had a tax lien.
And that was on the disclosure as well.
I just saw that in 30 seconds. But what showed me further, he had dropped his securities license maybe 8 years ago or so.
Which means that he was no longer regulated.
You think about this, right? So there are people driving around in their cars today without a driver's license. You don't know about, no one knows about who they are until something happens, right? The same thing happens in our industry. So if somebody's licensed, then the regulators can take a look at what they're doing. They've got purview into all. But once somebody drops their license, look at the government
agencies.
They have no
agencies, purview. Yeah, they don't have visibility.
They don't have it. They don't know what's going on unless something happens.
Yeah, they can't say. Unless they get
there's
a complaint.
300 million people in the United States. The Securities and Exchange Commission isn't following 300 million people to see if they're unlicensed registered brokers, right? They're just so dropped his license, was not registered as an investment advisor with either the state of California or the Securities and Exchange Commission.
So, which meant people should have gone through that easy step
right there
and not invested with the gentleman.
It wouldn't have taken much. And we have. And if
on our website, we have a number of guides.
But we've got a guide called How to Select a Financial Advisor. And look, obviously, we think Hanson McLean's a great firm. We've got three offices throughout Sacramento, an office in the Bay Area, and
there's
a couple
other great firms,
Denver.
Too.
There are other great firms as
and
well.
And there's lots
no question
of really bad ones, too.
Yes. So before you go and select an advisor or somebody sells you, you choose to put your money somewhere.
Just go through this.
Look, this would have saved...
Oh, $2 million.
The people
at least.
We're not talking wrong. It's not that complicated.
Scott,
it's really simple.
That's something close to personal.
Yes, because he lived 10 doors down from me. And he not only took advantage of those particular clients, but took advantage of the way I look at it, a whole group of people. Because when there's that distrust for our industry, it's not helpful for anybody.
Here's a gentleman out of Nevada.
Unfortunately, I use the word gentleman, and you use the word gentleman, which should be applied to someone who acts like a gentleman, not just a person.
Here's this scumbag out of Nevada.
There we go. Better.
He's working out of Nevada strip mall mailbox, who takes investors for $100 million in losses.
$100
million?
What was he selling?
$100 million. Working out of a Nevada strip mall mailbox, which means... They didn't even know where his office was. So he had what he was marketing, future income payments. So here's the rub here. They're private market products. So he's reselling these through other brokers. He's not just selling them himself. He's got other people out there selling them for him.
Yes. So he removed himself from the retail, the individual investor.
And became a wholesale.
And said, hey, we've got this great thing. And it would pay high commissions to the broker, right?
Yep.
Offer these great, nice, great returns, guarantees in place.
Kind of sounds a little bit like Madoff, right? Bernie Madoff did two things. He sold directly to investors, and then he sold wholesale, which is so-called investment advisors were selling them. So $100 million. What the story was that you've got 7% rate of returns on these guaranteed, and people were selling their pensions to you. So if someone was receiving $1,000 a month in pension, they could decide to redirect that income to future.
J.G. Gentwood, what was the ad? It's my money and I want it now. Same kind of concept.
Future Income Payments is the name of his company.
They called itself America's largest pension cash flow originator.
And
it's a global footprint of over 200 employees is what it stated.
That's what they said. Their mailbox was a United Parcel Service mailbox in a strip mall outside of Las Vegas. the same address that had been used by Mr. Cohn for dozens of companies, most of them now defunct, state records show. So
the dude was a convicted felon to begin with.
So had the people done some research, including the investment advisors?
Well, the brokers.
Don't
call them investment advisors.
Thank you.
They're brokers.
One of the sellers included Live Abundant, a firm based in Salt Lake City that promises on its website to empower you to live a more abundant life by replacing your old, outdated retirement philosophy. Sellers
according
included,
to this article, and this is from the Wall Street Journal.
Live Abundant.
It sold products from Future Income Payments, this company, as well as Woodbridge Group. Weren't they the ones that, the real estate something?
Yeah, it was another private placement company that collapsed. So this company, Live Abundant, tells you to forget about your outdated retirement philosophies. What they meant to say is forget about retirement if you invest in these products.
So the thing is, so here's the challenge here. So these are other brokers that are selling these products to their customers. They obviously hadn't done enough due diligence to begin with, number one, right? Because the guy's a convicted felon. No one ever visited their offices or anything like that because they don't
believe
exist.
The story.
They
didn't know
the
how the money was actually being held in escrow or who the custodian
wasn't.
Was. But the point being is, why would I not have invested in this? Because two reasons. One, the guarantees were too high. Number two, it is not publicly traded. You don't know what the value is on a daily basis. Don't ever buy anything
you can't get out of
as a retail investor. As a retail investor that you can't get out of. If you're a highly sophisticated investor, maybe it's okay to buy some commercial real estate or do some deals with a couple of close friends that you trust. But you can control the process
and money that you can that wouldn't impact your lifestyle if it went south.
That's correct.
Right?
That is correct.
That it's not going to impact your lifestyle if it didn't work out.
So to be a good investor,
these were sold to people. These were everyday people that were hardworking Americans that were now retired.
This article talks about a poor couple in Hemet, California that invested $78,000 with Future Income. Not 80, not 85 or 100, 78.
Which is probably all they had.
Which is a good chance that's all they had. It's all they had. And this was being sold directly through this convicted felon and through a third party. In this particular case, one of those third parties was Abundant Life. So, if you're approached by someone, pretty simple. Does it price? What's that mean?
How do I know the value
of it every day? Is it held at a custodian that is someone other than you?
Charles Schwab, Fidelity,
TD Ameritrade.
Some big company that you've heard
Pershing.
Of.
Right?
An independent custodian.
Bank of New York, independent of that advisor, of that person. Why? Why would you do that, Scott? Why do you want this asset to be held at third party?
Well, it's another layer of protection.
Correct. And if the advisor, the sales guy goes away, the custodian's still there. What do major Ponzi...
And the custodian, there's typically insurance in place that guarantees you on those securities.
What do major Ponzi schemes all have in common?
High returns. It's always some obscure kind of investment.
Guaranteed.
Only available, right?
Not traditional.
I mean, like this one. Here's what looked good about this.
And the custodians are normally the people that actually take the money.
This sounded perfect because they're pensions, which are guaranteed payments.
How could you go wrong?
People just selling their guaranteed payments ahead of time. And actually, these returns weren't so outlandish, a 7% return. It wasn't like it was 15%.
They're a little, but they're high. And they use the word guarantee. And they use the word guarantee.
Yeah. So here's how, if you're working with some advisor and they're recommending a product like this, you got to ask yourself why. Now, if you're working with an advisor and on a fee-based approach, fee basis, not a commission basis, this you're not going to run into these problems.
Not at all. So,
because these were all paid nice, big, fat commissions.
I'm going to show you an example of a thing that wasn't a Ponzi scheme, but was still a terrible investment. And what does this have in common with everything else? It doesn't price. It doesn't price. It was non-traded real estate investment.
Here's the thing. There are so many great investments in the public markets that you don't need to go to the private markets. unless you're worth several million, 10 million plus, maybe even 20 million plus, it just doesn't make sense to take on the risk that exists in the private market.
Yeah,
for most people, we're talking about the retirement dollars. There's no do-overs at this point.
So this is an article that comes to us from Investment News. And it talks about these limited real estate investment trusts.
This was amazing. And you've heard us talk for years about why we don't like non-traded REITs.
But this is the quote of it.
I mean, there was a guy who had a radio program for a while that kept pushing these all the time. We talked about them being
uncommon.
Non-correlated.
Yeah. And there's a guy right now who's sells life insurance as being a retirement vehicle. And if you do this, you're going to live the perfect life.
I hear one guy's talking about 8%, guaranteed 8%. You're just lying.
Yeah.
So nothing's out there guaranteeing an 8%.
These REITs were popular in the mid-2000s where they were sold. Even in the 08, 09, and 10, they were continuing to be sold.
REITs.
But non-traded real estate investment trusts.
Well, they were sold quite a bit even after the financial crisis.
But the fat commissions have been cut. And brokers have run away from the product.
Because they're not paying the commissions they used to.
Sales have dropped accordingly.
What's the point? Why invest in a non-traded real estate company when you can invest in publicly traded real estate companies?
Because
the commissions were paid high to the brokers.
This one was American Finance Trust.
This
was
amazing. It
went public.
This was amazing.
All that meant was they're not raising money. It didn't go public
If some broker sold you a non-traded real estate investment trust and it's on your brokerage statement every month, I'd be leery of it. This one was unbelievable.
It lost how much of its value the day it
started trading?
This was
called American Finance Trust. They were sold 5 years ago at $25 a share. This is what brokers sold them at. People are getting some sort of interest on a regular basis, annual basis from there.
Well, they were getting a payment, whether it was a dividend or interest or whether it was a return of principal.
The Securities Exchange Commission the last couple of years have tightened the rules and say, look, we need an independent board to come up with a value of these. Independent folks to value what's underneath this. And so it had been valued at $23.56 a share a month ago, right? So it came out at $25. It was trading pretty close to that. So far, you know, as long as the yield's been decent, it hasn't been bad. It went public a week or two ago. It went public under $15 a share, a 40% decline from what the independent board said it was worth.
So your statement shows share value at $24 and the first day it goes public, right? It drops by 40%. This is why we constantly say, don't buy anything that doesn't price or trades on an exchange.
Because you don't know.
And you look at this. How well have traded REITs done in the last few years versus
these? They've done great. Well, last year, not so well, but overall not.
Last few years from the time you bought.
The last 5 years, you've done fine. If you look at the real estate index, so that's the whole thing about why invest in something that you can't get out of tomorrow.
So go to
if it's not publicly traded, you can't get out of it.
Go to our website. There's two guides I would like you to look at before you hire or invest with anyone. One's called Retiree Beware. It talks about the products you should absolutely.
And you get this at HansonMcLean.com. Our website, HansonMcLean.com. Hanson's HANSON. McLean, MCCLAIN. We've got a great learning library. We're big on education. We're big on empowering investors to make the right decision.
The two guides, Retiree Beware and How to Select an Advisor. Take the 15 minutes.
It doesn't take much. That's what's so frustrating when we hear these stories and it's like, it wouldn't have taken much.
And before you hire anyone, including us, go through that checklist on how to select an advisor.
And our whole approach is we want people to have the greatest probability of financial success in their retirement. What steps can be taken for the highest probability of success? Which is why we're against non-traded products.
Correct.
Because you can't.
You don't know what they're worth.
The last thing you want is to suddenly find out one day that what you thought was worth one thing is worth 40% less.
Yeah. It's hard enough to save money for retirement without making bonehead mistakes. And these are real. People lost real money. So.
It's really frustrating.
This is depressing. We're not going to talk about this.
Yeah. And that's why we're talking. And it's, yeah. But it's, anyway, It is get it does get
it's depressing. Yeah.
So we're gonna switch right now at Hanson McLean's Money Matters, and we're gonna move to real
advice.
You
know why it's depressing? I always think it could be my mother or father that are getting ripped off like this.
You've had family members.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is a good point. Before I got involved in their finances.
I have an aunt. Yeah, check this out. Here's what's so frustrating. I'm not gonna say what side of the family, woman mid-80s. Attorney that she'd worked with before on a living trust had approached her and said they charged her, I don't know, $1,000 or $2,000 for some sort of long-term care analysis. And then they wanted to do more work. And I'm like, whoa, hold on. But then I found out they charge her $350 a year to be her attorney. Now, this is a person that has children that live close by, that are active in her life, that are willing and able to help with any of these decisions that might need to occur later on. And they're charging, this attorney was charging her $350 a year.
Just to be available to her.
Yes, and I said, why are you paying $350 a year? Well, he said, so I would be his attorney. That way, when the time comes when I need an attorney, I have an attorney. And I thought,
well, that's not how it works. unless it compounds as a retainer account.
I said, have him call me.
And he called?
Here's my cell phone. No, of course not. Here's my cell phone number.
I've never heard of such a thing.
What's the point of paying an attorney?
I've never even heard that. That is a new twist.
That's why I brought it up.
Good.
All right, so now let's turn to real advice. This is a segment on our program where we talk with one of our advisors, and they talk about a personal experience they had with a client they worked with. And keep in mind, this is unique to this individual client. You may have a different experience than what this client has. So Dave Cox has been with Hanson McLean for over 20 years, certified financial planner, great advisor. And so, Dave, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Oh, thanks, Scott. Pleasure to be with both of you guys.
Yeah. So tell us about the situation you encountered.
Well, I've got a situation which is not uncommon these days. I've got an 84-year-old widow, and she's been a client for many, many years, and she lives at home, and her health has been deteriorating for several years now, but in the last 3 to 4 years, starting to really catch up to her. And, you know, she's got two daughters, one that lives in Arizona and one that lives here in Sacramento. She lives in Vallejo, and you know, it's beginning to be, or it became a problem. And, you know, so there's been discussion with her about, you know, trying to find, you know, some in-home care, trying to find maybe a senior living facility. She's actually, you know, she's frail at this point, but she's independent. She is able, you know, to get around and move around. She got sight problems, things like that. So so the discussion has come up about, you know, trying to find a move from her home, which is always hard to do for someone who's lived there for, you know, 40, 50 years, move from her home and move into senior independent living.
And so that's financially is oftentimes a struggle. So what did you do? What process did you bring this longtime client through and the rest of her family to make them comfortable with the move?
So the process simply was, okay, let's take a look at, you have no debt. Let's take a look at what your expenses are right now. What are you paying to run the household? What are some of your ancillary expenses? And let's take a look at what your income is. And now let's start taking a look at what those independent living facilities would look like from a cost standpoint for you right now without needing any additional care.
Yeah, because they're typically much more expensive than staying in your house, right?
No question. I mean, again, she's living debt-free at this point. So automatically we move from her house to independent senior living. She's looking at somewhere between $32,000 to $5,000 a month on the high side. Right.
Yeah.
And but she's got some other expenses as well, even though, you know, we would be getting rid of some by her leaving. She's still going to incur some additional expenses. So we factored everything out and we determined that she needed about $5,700 a month to be able to move into a independent community facility, and then with that $5,700 a month, she'd be able to pay her rent and also pay for her expenses. And when we looked at her income coming in, which she didn't have a whole lot of income between Social Security and pension, she had around $2,500. So we need to generate around $3,200 more. She had about $500,000 of assets, and she has a home valued at $400,000.
Okay,
so she's actually got
plenty of assets to go for.
She
years.
Does.
Yeah.
So it's not dissimilar to the kind of planning that goes into determining if someone can retire.
Because without a doubt,
because you're starting with a new budget and a new scope going forward, and you just walk through the process with. The difference in this situation, it normally involves the parents and the children and the assets. But that was good planning, Dave. That is, and she comfortably into the home now?
She is. She's 2 weeks now into the home, and she's transitioned, into a senior community, and she's transitioned very well into that community.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for being at the hands of a client, and thank you,
and you know what?
For caring and helping your clients as you do.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
And it's interesting, Pat. I mean, we've been doing this a long time, right? So we've had clients that some retired relatively young, and now at this stage. And of course, we've had a lot of clients that we've helped them throughout their life and all the financial planning that goes along with it. And really, if you're looking at retiring, that's the kind of advisor you want. Someone who's going to be there, who understands these processes, is going to be there for not only the time that you are planning for your retirement, but that retirement transition and through the duration of every different stage that life may take you.
Yeah, and then an organization that they work at that can support that.
Absolutely. So, hey, this is all the time we have. Think it's been great being with you. Again, go to our website, HansonMcLean.com, and get the guide, How to Select a Financial Advisor, and the guide, Retiree Beware, as well as you can sign up for this podcast. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.
What matters most to you? Probably family and friends, but what else? When you're in your 20s, it's one thing. Your 30s and 40s, another. When your 50s creep in, you're older and wiser, but the sand in the hourglass of your asset accumulation stage has shifted. Right now, you're listening to Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Sure, they've been hosting Money Matters for 20 years, but they've been CEOs of Hanson McLean Advisors for longer than that. If you're over 50 and you've been saving for retirement, you're probably wondering how your preparation stacks up. Here's what you should do. Go to HansonMcLean.com and either schedule a free consultation with one of our credentialed advisors, or if you're not quite ready for that, maybe take a look at some of the helpful materials in our learning library. You'll see tutorials, podcasts, and articles on things like Social Security, retirement planning, investments, and a whole slew of other things that can help you retire well. Over 50 and starting to see retirement up ahead? Make sure you do it right. We can help. Go to HansonMcLean.com today.